You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
All right, you are Locked On Broncos. I'm Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com, part of the Scout Media Network. With me is my co-host, Luke Polglaze, a semi-pro football coach and NFL draft analyst. And we also have Brandon Perna. We're going to welcome to the show. Guys, how are you doing today?
Doing great, man. Excited to have Brandon with us.
I knew we were going to try to talk at the exact same time. Yeah. I just knew it.
It's a problem when you can't see anybody else.
Exactly.
We'll figure it out. Well, we're excited to have Brandon on. Of course, this fella needs no introduction. He's the brainchild behind That's Good Broncos in the bearded version of Edward R. Murrow. We're going to... Yeah, you still have that on your Twitter?
I don't... Wait, let me look. I don't think so. No, I changed it. I definitely changed it.
Well, we're going to get to some fun Broncos talk here, but Locked On Broncos is here. As you know, it's a daily podcast focused entirely on the Denver Broncos. Luke and I, we just joined the team, and we are committed to bring you a consistent show 5 days a week. We know the Mile High Maniacs need their Broncos fix, and we're going to be here to give it to you. Locked On Broncos, it's on Audio Boom. Make sure, however, to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. Over the next few weeks, throughout the end of the season and into draft time and free agency, we're going to have a ton of excellent Bronco talk coming your way. And again, we're not here to just report the news. You can get that anywhere. We're here to give you a little bit more in-depth analytical look at your favorite team and cover it well. So be sure to tell your friends about the show, and let's light this thing up. So, Brandon, what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about, first off, what happened. Well, actually, before we get into Broncos talk, you know what I wanted to ask you about? I think our listeners would be interested, too. Tell us about what you've been up to lately.
Oh, wow. I've been up to a lot of things, working, primarily on my YouTube channel, That's Good Sports. So Broncos videos there all the time. I've also been producing segments for Vic Lombardi's weekly football show, Let's Talk Football on Altitude Sports.
Oh, yeah.
And this week we have a cool piece airing. We shot with Brandon McManus. Vic and McManus drove around in my 1989 Buick. We kind of set it up like they're going to drive around in McManus's Bentley, because Vic did that with CJ Anderson, but we said, he needs to drive a car that kind of fits his personality. So they drove around in that.
Nice.
They went to Sonic, got some food, and it's cool because I want to do something more with that series. Because that Buick was my grandpa's, and he was a big Broncos fan, and he's a big reason I became a Broncos fan. So it's pretty nice. Cool that they driving around in his old car, which he took immaculate care of and loved more than maybe some family members, with a Bronco in there. So that nice. And then also for BSN, we shot an interview with Will Parks at a barber shop. That's pretty cool. That will be, on the interweb soon as well. So
sweet.
Well, yeah.
Look forward to that, everybody listening. That's going to be funny stuff.
This basically sounds like the football edition of Comedians in a Car Getting Coffee, right?
That's right.
Yeah, kind of.
the new Seinfeld.
Yeah, except, not as funny because Jerry Seinfeld's not in there. And it's a kicker. So
they need to get you on camera one of these days, Brandon.
Yeah, I'll weasel my way in there. I make an appearance in the back seat with the camera at one point. So, I'll live with that for now.
Nice. Well, we have some interesting Broncos talking points we're going to get to here. On Monday, the Broncos got back to business, held a practice at their UC Health training facility. Gary Kubiak revealed some interesting things Monday. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But the big news I want to talk about off the bat is the Broncos made a pair of roster moves on Monday, waiving defensive back Taurean Nixon and signing wide receiver Marlon Brown. We're going to break it down, but the first thing that pops out to me here, guys, is just kind of my overall empathy for poor Taurean Nixon. basically since the Broncos drafted him in the seventh round last year, he's kind of been on that roller coaster of bouncing back and forth between the practice squad and the active roster. And Brandon, I know you're acquainted with Torian Nixon. He got a Super Bowl ring out of it, but don't you have to feel a little bit for this kid at this point?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I thought when I saw, you know, they waived him was like, oh, crap, that sucks. Because, you know, he seems like a really nice guy who's just working really hard every day when he was on the practice squad to try to make, you know, the offense that they're playing against better. And he was activated for what game was that? A couple against the Raiders?
I believe
when,
so, yeah.
Yeah.
The Broncos were a little banged up. And, you know, he played all right there. He had that one play that he got the pass interference call. And I think that's kind of what people remember. But I'm hoping that, you know, he gets re-signed back onto the practice squad and, you know, maybe at some point finds a more permanent role on the team.
What are your thoughts on Nixon, Luke?
Yeah, well, that, you know, with every NFL roster, you have 53 guys and the top maybe 45, you know, they're pretty solid in their job security, but there's always that last eight, and especially 51, 52, 53 on the roster. They're always just scratching and clawing just for that opportunity. So, you know, you got to cheer when a guy like Nixon makes it to the active roster. Ultimately, I always get interested to see if they do make it through waivers, because obviously if they get picked up off waivers, they're getting signed to another active roster.
Right, they're gone.
Right, which, you know, is kind of, in a way, they're not really going to be stepping down that much. They're transitioning to a new team. They're going to be learning a new scheme, but, you know, they're still on an active roster in the league. And, you know, with Nixon, my assumption would be that he clears waivers and makes it back to that practice squad.
Well, this move tells me a couple things. One, Aqib Talib is healthy again, or at least as healthy as he's probably going to get this year. He practiced Monday, Talib, and by all accounts is expected to play on Sunday night against the Chiefs. And two, the Broncos really like them some Marlon Brown, who's now, you know, I guess you could call it his second stint with the team.
Right.
Kubiak got to know Brown, 6'5", 214-pound Marlon Brown, very well as Baltimore's offensive coordinator in 2014. And from what I understand, the Broncos signed him to a two-year deal. Now, wide receiver is perceived as a position of strength, I think, for most people outside of Dove Valley. Inside, it doesn't really sound like the Broncos are happy with the group. In fact, Eric Trickle wrote about this very issue recently at milehighhuddle.com, naming the receiver position as Denver's fifth highest draft need currently. Luke, for you, what do you take away from the Brown signing? And then, of course, Brandon, follow up on your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I think it is a very interesting signing in the way that it speaks to the kind of the way the Broncos are really conceiving of this roster right now. I mean, this puts them right now, he's going to be their seventh wide receiver on the roster, which is, in the modern era, a lot of wide receivers to be carrying. You'll see teams go with five, maybe six, but seven is very, very rare. And it's kind of, you know, it's an interesting role that Brown brings, because you've got guys like Demaryius Thomas, who's 6'3", 229, Jordan Taylor is 6'5", 210. And then you've got Marlon Brown, who's 6'5", 214. He's kind of a red zone guy that you just throw it up inside the 10 and he goes and gets it. So, you know, this is kind of a thing where you wonder, okay, well, is this their solution to their red zone woes, that over the bye week they've said, all right, we need another receiver who can go up and get it in there, you know, in those contested situations. So that's definitely a possibility. But again, you see them do this with AJ Derby. He comes in and just takes basically the share of the snaps away from Jeff Heirman. Obviously, you've got a guy in Cody Latimer who's a draft choice who has just not been performing as well.
Right. How about you, Brandon? What do you take away from it?
Yeah, I think basically what they're going to do is they're going to line up three wide receivers now: Taylor, Brown, and Thomas, the biggest men on the team. And they're just going to have Simeon chuck the ball up into the air and let those guys come down with it, because they've got big receivers. And I think that's what surprised me, is I feel like kind of the receiving position has been underperforming this season. And we've seen Trevor Siemian target Jordan Norwood quite a bit, at least more than we saw Norwood last season. But I still feel like that slot receiver position is a weakness. So if they were to make a move for a receiver, I would have expected them to grab somebody, you know, who's smaller and faster. And they even have a guy on the practice squad in Khalif Raymond, who might be better suited than Jordan Norwood for a role like that. But I also don't know who's available for a position like that. So, I think they're honestly just trying to figure out the puzzle there, because in addition to the receiver's lack of production, we've seen a lack of production from the tight end spot as well. So maybe they think bringing in a guy like Brown can ease some of those problems.
You know, I thought it was interesting. Khalid Al-Shami, whom we all know, brought up an interesting point on Twitter on Monday. He said basically that the Brown signing is essentially an indictment on Cody Latimer. And Latimer, of course, is in his third year with the team, former second-round pick. John Elway, I think, has struggled a little bit to hit on his second-rounders. You have Raheem Moore, Orlando Franklin. They were the two, both number twos in 2011, Elway's maiden draft class. Both played out their rookie deals in Denver. You got to give them that, but they were not retained. The Broncos did not try, really, to bring either player back. Then you had Derek Wolfe as Denver's number two in 2012. He was also the first pick. They traded out of the first round. Wolf's been resigned because he's a freaking animal. And then we have Monte Ball in 2013. He was a bust, waived after two seasons. I think he's been in jail, prison, or he's at least filed bankruptcy from what I understand. And then Latimer in 2014, Tyson Brilo in 2015. Book's still out on him, but I think it's safe to say he's been a disappointment thus far. And then we have Adam Gotsis this past spring, who was kind of a surprise dark horse. You know, for a lot of people, a surprise in that, you know, he was drafted that early, I think. So the jury's still out on Cimbrilo and Gotsis, but clearly, for all the praise that Elway justifiably receives for his draft acumen, he struggled to hit consistently in the second round. Luke, as our resident draft Nick, why do you think that is?
You know, it is kind of just a very worrying trend, really, just given the history that he's had. You know, Derek Wolfe is, you know, an all-pro caliber player, but at the same time, you gotta have a better hit record than that, in effect, especially when you're going to have, you know, guys looking back through those drafts and saying, well, you know, oh, Eddie Lacy was picked a couple picks after Monte Ball. You know, Travis Kelce was picked a couple picks after him, too.
Right.
You know, that you can argue about draft value and where guys were picked until you're blue in the face. But it ultimately comes down to, for me, you have to be confident in the guys that you're going to make investments in. And I think the Cody Latimer one really does stick out because they traded up to acquire him. So anytime that you trade up to acquire a guy, you need to have done your homework. You know, this isn't the movie Draft Day where you can wake up on the morning of the draft and decide, you know what, we're going to mortgage our future on this guy. Wait, let's check on him and, you know, see what he really is. No, you need to know that before you even consider that trade. You need to have done your homework. So this is, I think, a situation where the Broncos know it's a weakness. They've seen that with the underperformance of Latimer, with the underperformance of Heuermann on this team as well, a third round pick. So they know they need to start getting some production out of those guys. And that just comes down to due diligence in the drafting process, which we've seen them hit so often on day three picks. It's really kind of mystifying as to how they just miss so consistently on second rounders.
What do you think, Brandon?
I think that I don't know. I don't want to comment too much on the draft because I think, you know, Luke kind of nailed it there. One thing with Latimer is I know that concussion he suffered this season. He was out for like three games, I think. And I think that's unfortunate because this was the season that he needed to perform to kind of earn his role on this team. But I think the other thing, and this can go back to Marlon Brown, that's puzzling is when you look at Gary Kubiak offenses, you know, dating into Houston or even back to, you know, when he was with the Broncos, they're not offenses that utilize really more than those first two receivers on a regular basis. So bringing in another guy like that is strange. And obviously you drafted, you know, a guy like Latimer before Kubiak was here. So maybe that would be different, you know, if Kubiak were there at the time. So, I mean, I just don't know how the ball's going to get spread around to that many guys, in addition to Elway having sort of a rough go around in that second round on the draft.
Yeah, and just to jump in, I think that's a great point. And I know back in the preseason I said this, and it's kind of hasn't exactly played out over the course of the season, but I roughly compared the third receiver in a Kubiak offense to a fullback in a Manning offense. You know, it neither one just doesn't fit.
Right. Absolutely. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out, and we can only hope that Marlon Brown can make an impact and maybe help elevate the offense for what it's worth. All right, but real quick, let's talk about SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the football games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like, you've been there, there's nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find the seats for this weekend or any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket SeatGeek is given, they do a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket that you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all, our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how you get that $20 rebate on tickets. Four things. One, download the SeatGeek app. Two, go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code. Three, enter promo code LOBRONCOS. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So go download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LOBRONCOS today. Now, while we have Brandon on the horn, the other topic I wanted to get to today was some of the news that came out of Dove Valley on Monday following practice. Derek Wolfe and Aqib Talib, again, both practicing. From the sounds of it, they're on pace to start on Sunday night against the Chiefs. Talib has missed about a month, which includes three games. Bradley Roby played admirably, made some big plays in Talib's absence, but it's not easy replacing a guy in Aqib Talib, who I think could be argued as a future Hall of Famer. Talib was, of course, drafted in the first round out of Kansas back in 2008 by Tampa Bay. He's on his third team now in Denver, but from a production standpoint, this guy, I think if he plays his cards right moving forward, is going to be in the Hall of Fame conversation down the road. He has 33 career interceptions. He'll need to move that up the board some, but nine of them have been returned for a touchdown, which ties him at fourth all time. He's a three-time Pro Bowler, second-team All-Pro, and he's only 30. He has a lot of football left in the tank. What do you guys think? Am I right here regarding Aqib Talib? Brandon, I'll ask you first. Is Aqib Talib a future Hall of Fame-worthy type of player in your mind?
I think he's definitely on that track. Talib does a few things really well. We all know how physical he is, the way he plays the game, but I was doing like a post game with Vic Lombardi, and he said something about Talib that I think he doesn't get enough credit for. And it's that he's one of the smartest corners in the NFL. He's a guy who understands the game. He studies, he watches a ton of film, and that's why he makes so many of the plays that he does. I think that's one of those things that kind of goes unnoticed, and you think it's just because, you know, he's a big corner, over 6 feet tall, physical, can play with the big number ones on any team. But it is, you know, the NFL, a career in the NFL can turn at any point. He's got, I don't know, he needs another few really good years, I think, to be in that conversation. But I think when you lose a guy like Talib for a while, you see exactly how valuable he is to that defense, and it speaks more in his favor for that case.
What say you, Luke? Is Talib Hall of Fame worthy?
You know, I think he's definitely on that track, and we're going to come up against a period right in the next couple of years where we're going to see a lot of defensive backs get inducted into the Hall of Fame. You're going to have guys like Ed Reed come up, Champ Bailey, boy, I can't see Darrell Revis sticking in the league for too much longer. So these are guys that are going to be coming up really shortly into their kind of eligibility periods. And I think, you know, I think they are going to be there. Troy Polamalu is another guy you got to keep into the conversation. So one thing that I think could count against Tlaib is just, you know, the absolute depth of guys that are going to be, you know, in that conversation. And then, well, then if you're a selector, okay, well, are we going to put, you know, three or four defensive backs in a single season, or are we going to spread this around a little bit? And now I do think that is going to kind of, you know, just, it's going to bump his case down a little bit. He's also had, you know, obviously off and on field issues,
yep.
Suspensions, the whole ice up sun incident with Steve Smith.
right.
Still one of my favorite NFL moments, but you know, he's a guy who has gotten suspended for gouging players' eyes. And, you know, there's, you know, as long as Peter King says, you know, Darren Sharper should still be considered for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, there's hope.
Right.
Jesus.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think,
go ahead, Brandon.
Sorry. Go ahead. I think that, you know, with Tlaib, his off the field issues will be a factor. But more so than that, it's tough for Denver Broncos to get into the Hall of Fame. I think we really saw that last year when they had three guys make it down to, you know, the final round there, and none of them got in. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting. And you bring up Champ Bailey. What's kind of crazy, just thinking about, like, watching the defense, when you watched it with Champ Bailey, he was so good, other teams just refused to throw it his way. And with Tlaib, you get something different because they still do throw at him. So he still does get those picks, and he still does, you know, return those balls for touchdowns. I think, you know, if Champ Bailey had more balls thrown his way, he would even have a better, you know, chance of being a first ballot type Hall of Famer player.
Right. And the things you got to think about, too, like considering Darrell Revis, and Champ Bailey, is both guys have all the All-Pro accolades, they have the Pro Bowls, all that stuff, but neither player was able to get that elusive Super Bowl ring. Champ Bailey had his shot in 2013, but it was a swing and a miss, so you got to wonder if that would hurt both players. Now, Tlaib, he got that ring. He finally got his ring, and maybe that'll set him up down the road.
And I think this is kind of a conversation for another time, but Champ Bailey in 2006, gentlemen, he was targeted 35 times, allowed 4 receptions, and got 10 picks.
Ridiculous. Yeah, that was a crazy year.
Yeah. Well,
that's when they stopped throwing at him altogether after that season.
One of my favorite memes to this day remains a picture of the Earth, and it says, you know, 2/3 of the Earth is covered by water. Champ Bailey covers the other third, or whatever. That's one of my favorites, dating back probably circa 2008, 2009. Anyway, let's talk about Derek Wolfe real quick. Getting him back, obviously, is great news. The Broncos have struggled to defend the run, even with him in the lineup. And without him, you know, when it was the news first broke that he had fractured his elbow, I really shuddered to think how they'd perform. But in their defense, in the one game that Wolfe missed in Week 10, the Broncos held the Saints to just 80 yards rushing on 21 attempts. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, Wolf is one of John Elway's second-round picks. I think you could call him one of his cornerstone picks. He's developed into one of the top five tech defensive ends in the NFL. And as you mentioned, Luke, I would agree, an all-pro caliber player. Now, going against Kansas City this week, with how committed they are to running the ball, getting Wolf back comes at a very opportune time. And, in fact, I was a little bit surprised at how short or how quick maybe the timeline was. For you, Luke, what do you think it is makes Derek Wolfe so good? What does he bring to the table, and how does he change the Broncos' front seven?
Yeah, I think the one thing that you have to immediately comprehend with Derek Wolfe is this guy, he just plays gritty. He plays nasty, and that's exactly what you want in the trenches. He's a guy who's seen action really kind of across that Broncos front. He's playing the three tech now, but he's played inside in the past. You know, he has played a lot of roles for this Denver defense. He's a leader. He's a vocal player on the field. And he, you know, the biggest thing for him has always been his high motor. He's always still playing through the whistle, and, you know, you can't bottle that, because if you could, everybody would be selling it.
Brandon, if you were going against Derek Wolfe and he told you that he was going to eat your children, Would you believe him?
Yes. He's just an intimidating figure. You know what I mean? Like, if you see him, he is just a big, scary looking dude.
Oh yeah.
I would say I don't have any children, so you don't scare me. And then I would jump out wide and not let him touch me. That's how I'd get around Wolf.
Utilize your speed.
Exactly. Because I don't think he could catch me. Mm-hmm. But right now, the problem is he's the only guy on that defensive line who is playing at a high level consistently. You know, we saw one game where Jared Crick played pretty well. But other than that, the defensive line is playing almost as poorly as the Broncos' offensive line. They're not getting production from Sylvester Williams. They're not getting production from Crick. Gotsis is still a work in progress. You know, Vance Walker's injury was more significant than I think people, you know, realized. And behind Williams, you know, you have Darius Kilgo, and he's not getting the production there either. So you need one of those guys to step up to make their presence felt on that unit for this team to have success and consistently stop the run, which is going to become more important as the weather gets crappier and, you know, the playoffs start to approach.
Definitely. You know, you bring up the offensive line. We found out today, or I should say Monday, that the Broncos, they're going to play both Donald Stevenson and Tyson Brilo at right tackle. In fact, Gary Kubiak confirmed that, saying that both are going to play. You know, they're going to be looking at consistency and basically see what happens, etc. Now, personally, I'm at a point where I don't really care what the Broncos do at right tackle so long as, you know, the guys are doing their job when they're on the field. The Broncos did rotate tackles at times last year to, I think, moderate success, but there are many who would say that it's unwise to rotate tackles in the NFL, that it makes it more difficult for the starting five to build chemistry and cohesion, etc. Do you see it that way, Brandon, two guys rotating like that at a single position on the O-line?
Yeah, I think you have to start both guys. The problem is you have to start them both at the same time. That's the only way this is going to work because I'm not sold on Tyson Brilo, and Donald Stevenson's underperformed all season. The Broncos barely use their tight ends in the passing game anyway, so I just line up with two right tackles for the rest of the season, see what happens.
There you go. Luke, and we've had many conversations on the, you know, the right tackle situation. We've talked about the possibility of rotating guys, but since we're new to Locked On Broncos, share with us your thoughts on the matter. Two guys rotating at a single position like that.
Well, we saw, I'm trying to think of how I really want to phrase this. We saw this actually happen last year with the Patriots. Bill Belichick did it. He kind of had this model where he would bring in different guys for different situations. It's kind of, you know, you might have a red zone package at wide receiver and a between the 20s package at wide receiver. Well, he did that with offensive line, which is entirely new, and it didn't entirely work. So I think it is possible to rotate your linemen if you have a plan in place, if you know what you're going to do. But if you're just rotating them because of quality of play, I think that is problematic. I know that the coaches really this week, they have to be preaching consistency in play, in performance, in attitude. And I really think that they can demonstrate some consistency by picking a starter, naming a starter, and going with that. Because at 10 games in the season, it's just so hard to hold an open competition for a starting job when at this point you need to really be, you know, buckled down and working, you know, with who you have instead of just trying to determine what you have.
Right. Well, last thing, and then we're going to get out of here. The Vikings released Ronnie Hillman on Monday, and since C.J. Anderson was put on reserve, injured reserve, I think it's safe to say the Broncos have kind of struggled on the ground. You know, Devontae Booker's being asked as a rookie to step into kind of a bell cow role, and Capri Bibbs is really seeing his first extended action in the NFL. For you, Luke, do you think the Broncos should try to bring Hillman back? I mean, they could use a change of pace back. What are your thoughts?
I think they actually really should think about it. You know, Hillman is by no means a number one running back in this league, but he did lead this team in rushing last year. They know what he is. They know what he brings. And I think the one thing that he brings above all is speed, which is something that they're just so lacking with from this running back group as it stands. Devontae Booker and Capri Bibbs are very, very similar running backs, and neither one has that extra gear that Ronnie Hillman does. For the right price, I absolutely bring him in because they just don't have that presence on the roster.
What do you think, Brandon? Keep or bring Hillman back or roll with the running back stable as is?
I'd probably just roll with what they have. I'm curious to see. They have Terrell Watson on the practice squad, and I would rather see kind of what he has. Unless Ronnie Hillman actually knows how to play right tackle, then I'm not sure he's going to help the Broncos out a ton.
Well, right on. I think that's going to do it. Brandon, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. Of course, Brandon and I and Luke, actually, the three of us, we go way back. Brandon and I and Luke also for a time we worked together at Mile High Huddle. Brandon made videos. Now he's moved on. He's still doing That's Good Broncos, which is appointment YouTube watching on a weekly basis. And, of course, he, as he mentioned, he's doing stuff with Altitude and BSN. So check out his work there. Brandon, thanks for joining us, bud.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay,
thanks,
brother.
Man.
Also, I love you guys.
I love you, too.
We needed to say that.
Thanks, brother.
I may or may not be crying over here.
And also, congratulations on getting married.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big deal. Congrats, brother.
Married life's good. It's like I'm a real adult now, you know?
Absolutely. Well, we'll look forward to those two pieces you got coming down the pike this week, and we'll talk to you here soon.
Awesome. See you guys.
All right, buddy. See ya. All right, Luke, real quick, before we get out of here, there's one last thing I want to get out there for our listeners. If your company is interested in marketing to men between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast. 98% of Locked On Broncos, our listenership, is male, 80% of which are between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want to reach that male 18 to 44-year-old demographic, this is your spot. Our rates are reasonable. Email me at milehighhuddle@gmail.com. to find out. So that's going to do it for us. Again, big thanks to Brandon for joining us. You can follow Brandon on Twitter at Brandon Perna. Luke and I will be back on Wednesday, and we're hoping to be able to collaborate with the guys from Locked On Chiefs. Stay tuned for that. Also, check out Locked On NFL with Matt Williamson and Locked On Fantasy Football with Vinny Iyer. You can find Luke Polglaze on Twitter at Luke Polglaze and myself at Chad N. Jensen. The show's Twitter handle is at Locked On Broncos. Make sure you subscribe. For Luke Polglaze, I'm Chad Jensen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I don't know. You're going to ask him because he didn't finish the game. Ice up, son. Ice up.